afternoon, listeners, and welcome to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip on this, what's turning out to be a pretty nice Cinco de Mayo and also a Kentucky Derby Saturday. I'm Jeff Pedro, I'm with Mark Avery, and we're from Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com. You can give us a call at 937-293-3914, or you can stop by the range at 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine, right across from DP&L, and we'd be more than glad to assist you with any of your firearms-related needs. This past week, I was talking to Mark right before the show, and there wasn't a whole lot of things going on. However, a couple things I just want to start off today. I just started this past week doing some testing, some private testing of the single stack 9mm. I've had some time down at the range in between lessons and things of that nature, and I've been doing some testing, and although it's in a very formative stages, I just want to comment on a couple of observations that I've made. Just to give you an idea, right now in stock, in inventory for our Try It Before You Buy It in for our range training programs, we have a number of the single stack 9mm. And for listeners out there who may not be familiar with that concept, the single stack 9mm are being developed because people are looking for a 9mm self-defense gun that's a little bit easier to conceal than some of the traditional firearms. And again, that has to do with a lot of factors. Mark and I, we don't have a whole lot of trouble concealing the double stack full size guns, but again, there's two of them in some cases. But other people, you know, they're looking for something a little bit thinner, a little bit more slimline, and the manufacturers are responsive to those needs. And I want to tell you something: they're coming out with some pretty interesting products. I have to tell you that just yesterday, I shot the brand new Smith & Wesson M&P Shield, and it is a tremendously interesting and fun to fire and functional firearm. I have to say that of all that I fired, and I'm going to go down the list here in just a minute, but it's very, very smooth, and it really added a great addition to the Smith & Wesson M&P line, and I predict that that's going to be the gun of the year this year. Some people say it's the obvious. I know Smith & Wesson people would certainly say that, but I've shot several of the popular guns, and I predict right now that's going to be the shooting industry gun of the year, because it's a darn good one, and everybody that's shot it has had very similar successes or experiences. Yesterday, for example, I compared the M&P with the Beretta Nano and the new Sig Sauer, we just received the Sig Sauer P290, and you know, there's pros and cons, and I don't want to go into a whole lot of detail. The one main difference between those three guns is that the P290 is a double action trigger, constant double action trigger, whereas both the Shield and the Nano are striker fired firearms, and obviously the double action gun's going to have a little bit tougher trigger, but it was a pretty decent trigger pull on the P290. But I'll tell you that comparing the three, the Shield by far in initial stages performed across the various things I was looking at. I was looking at things about how easily the magazine seated, both when it was fully loaded and in the lockback position, and with the slide forward, because that's sometimes an issue for some people, because they don't realize when the slide is forward on a semi-automatic firearm and you go to load a fully loaded magazine into that firearm, it's naturally going to be a little bit tougher because it has to push on the lower portion of that slide as it goes up into the chamber. So it's going to be a little bit harder and in some cases quite difficult. But again, there's a couple of options you have there. Obviously, if you lock the slide to the rear in the guns that you can do that on and then go ahead and charge the weapon, it's not going to be an issue. Or if you just not load it to capacity, go ahead and load the weapon, and once you load and holster the weapon, then top off the magazine and you should be in decent shape. But there's just some issues that you need to take into consideration. But some others that I'm going to be comparing, and I'm working with an individual, Dave Williams, who you've heard on this radio show, a fellow law enforcement officer, retired from the city of Dayton, doing some magazine writing or article writing for a couple of magazines. We're going to compare a variety of them, and we're going to add the entire car series of 9mm because they're doing a great job. The MK9, the P9, and the CW9 are all tremendous firearms. So if you take those three car products and the three others that I mentioned, the M&P Shield, the Beretta Nano, and the SIG P290, and add to that the most popular gun in the world, at least by way of sales right now, the Ruger LC9, you've got a great selection. You've got a tremendous selection and a lot of variety and some good things to choose from. So it's just something I want to encourage you to do if you're so inclined. Stop down the range, our Try It Before You Buy It program, $10 plus the cost of a box of ammo. If you're thinking about buying one of those guns, you want to compare one of the single stacks to maybe what you're carrying right now, I'd encourage you to give it a try because it's going to be a great option. And I will just tell you, just down the road here, probably the end of this month, no later than the early part of next month, at least projected, Springfield's going to be coming out with its Springfield XDS in .45 caliber, and then right behind it, they're going to come out with the XDS, which S stands for slim, in the 9mm. And Mark and I had a chance to shoot those guns out in Texas in January at the AccuSport extravaganza that they had down in a buyer's show down in where were we, Mark? We were outside Dallas.
Yeah, it was Fort Worth.
Fort Worth. Mm-hmm. Fort Worth area. And it's another great gun. So, you know, there's some good products, and the manufacturers are being real responsive. The only thing is the consumers are being overly indulgent, and they can't catch up. And they're having a heck of a time, and this is continuing. And almost all of the dealers right now are on what's called allocation, meaning so many guns are being sold that you only get a limited supply. So I just want to encourage our listeners to do your homework, try out the guns that you're interested in shooting, and don't. I really want to tell you at this stage of the game, don't settle for your second or third choice if it's a matter of just waiting a little bit of time. You don't have to do that. And I know some of the gun dealers are pretty hard pressed right now. I stopped in at a shop yesterday, and I don't want to mention the name, but I stopped in just to see what he had, and very minimal inventory. And
that's the same as true for us.
Absolutely,
we just don't have much in the way of stock.
We were fortunate that we made some advanced purchases, and I had a pretty decent residual from last year, and it's dwindling because obviously people were looking, and we only sell to our members and to our people that take our classes. And I've had a number of people call from the outside, and they want to purchase guns. And out of fairness to our members and the people that are loyal to Sim Trainer, we just don't do that. And but it's getting hard for everybody, and I just want to encourage you to just be patient. We don't know when it's going to break, but at some point it's going to break. The manufacturers are doing the best they can. You know, we've talked to all of the people from the leading companies, and they're just in some cases they're working 2 and 3 shifts, not necessarily 7 days a week, but they're doing the best they can under the circumstances. Obviously, it's a great situation to be in from a producer or manufacturing standpoint, but it's not always the best thing here. But I'm going to encourage you, just give it a shot, literally and figuratively. If you're interested in trying out some of those guns, come on down. And for $10 plus the cost of a box of ammo, you can try out any of those single stacks and see how they compare to what you're carrying now.
Let's go out to the phones, and we'll talk to Albert, who's calling from Dayton. Albert, welcome to the show.
Hi. Welcome. Thank you. Nice to be here. I have a question pertaining to open carry and CCW.
All right.
Earlier this week, I informed a police department I need to fill out a report, so an officer was there in a parking lot, and we met at a designated location. As me and my girlfriend, we both CCW, and we also open carry. As we stopped in the parking lot, we saw the cruiser starting to pull up. We got out of the vehicle, and we were both open carrying at the time, about mid-size on each side of my vehicle. And the officer took a little bit of time, and then he started approaching the vehicle. At that time, I informed the officer I was CCW, and just to put him at ease, but then he requested my license, and I said, I didn't have to because my status is I'm open carrying. He and I disagree on this, so I throw that out to the audience and see what they think.
Okay. Would you like to know what I think?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. All right. We can wait for folks to call in, but based on the situation that you just described, mm-hmm. because you had just exited your vehicle, that means that the only way you can carry a loaded firearm legally is if you have a license to carry a concealed handgun. Now, recognizing that Ohio has a separate set of rules for open carry, which basically there are no rules for open carry, except where you have a prohibited place. You can't carry a weapon inside a place, open or concealed. That's not so that doesn't change. But there's a separate set of rules for carrying a motor vehicle. So in a motor vehicle, the only way you can have a loaded firearm is if you have a license to carry concealed handgun that you are carrying pursuant to that license, which means it must be a handgun. And then there used to, of course, be restrictions on how you could carry in the motor vehicle. Those have gone away. So as long as you have a loaded handgun in the motor vehicle, you must have your license to carry concealed handgun. So as you had just exited the vehicle, according to what you just described, then you were in a condition where you must have a license to carry concealed handgun for you to have been behaving legally as you approached the came to that parking location. So I'm not sure that I understand what the question is. You still there? Hello?
Mark, let me just I know a little bit about this situation, and I just want to offer or throw out there for the listeners. Here's an issue that comes up frequently, this concept of open carry. Now, obviously, the state of Ohio has no statutory provision that addresses it. However, the state of Ohio Constitution does not have any prohibitions against open carry. So people choose to exercise their constitutional right, and they decide they're going to open carry. Now, some people do it because they don't want to go through the process of obtaining a license, and they don't want to go to the class because they're true strict constitutionalists, and they believe that that is their right, and they do that, and that's fine. There's other people who, and this is the opposite extreme, not the individual who called in, but there are people like the person over in Philadelphia we talked about last year that wanted to draw law enforcement attention to himself so that he could purposefully create conflict and conflict and maybe engage law enforcement in some sort of a dialogue, and who knows what the outcome is. There was a case up in Northern Ohio either last year or toward the end of 2010 where something similar happened, and it was pretty clear from the facts that the individual was doing to provoke law enforcement response as opposed to simply exercising his or her right to carry. Now, along with that, the state of Ohio passed a law in 2004 allowing individuals to carry concealed for the purposes primarily for self-defense, and that's a great step. And since then, we've made some great strides to advance that. And when we come back from the break, Mark, I'm gonna engage you a little bit, and I would like Al to stay on the phone if he's still out there and continue this conversation because it's a critical issue, and I think a lot of people are interested in it.
Okay, and we do need to take our first break for the hour. If you'd like to be part of this show, call the studio at 457-1290. 457-1290 is the number in here, and we will get you up on the board and add you to this conversation as well. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. And right before the break, we were speaking with Al, and Al wanted to know about our opinion concerning a situation he was in whereby he was driving a vehicle and he had an encounter with law enforcement, which he initiated by calling, asking law enforcement to respond so that he could make a report. And then when the officer arrived on the scene, he got out of his vehicle, had his gun in plain sight, identified himself as a CHL holder, and then claimed that he was a open carry. He was in an open carry mode when the officer questioned him about his CHL. There's one thing I mentioned several things before the break, but I want to just refer people to section 2923.12 of the revised code, which deals with carrying concealed weapons, and specifically subsection B4 states that such individuals, when stopped, shall not knowingly disregard or fail to comply with a lawful order for law enforcement, including asking for identification and or requesting that the individual keep their hands in plain sight. And now let me just take through two separate scenarios, because this one I think is a little bit more complicated in that Al was in a vehicle. The officer saw him in the vehicle. He got out of the vehicle, and he went from CHL holder to self-claimed or self-proclaimed open carry individual.
Well, in fact, open carry, right.
If this would have been a case where I was just, or the officer was just driving down the street, and they happened to look over and see someone walking down the street in open carry, unless I had reasonable articulable suspicion or probable cause to stop that individual, all I could do is walk over and engage him in conversation. If the individual chose not to talk with me, he could have basically continued on his way, and there was nothing I could do to force that individual who's exercising his constitutional right to open carry, absent any other mitigating circumstances, a reasonable belief that a crime is committed, is about to be committed. I couldn't engage him in any kind of encounter whatsoever. However, in this particular case, Al called law enforcement and requested assistance, so all law enforcement was acting in their official capacity, and when they do that and they arrive on the scene, they have the authority to request identification. Now, will they all the time? I don't know the answer to that. In this particular situation, I don't know what Al, and I'll ask him. I think you're still on the line, Al. Are you out there?
Yeah, still here.
What was your motivation, if you care to share with the, was it just your right that you felt under the constitutional provisions in the state of Ohio that you don't have to provide that, or did there, was there some other motivation?
Absolutely no. There was two statuses there. It was a concealed carry when it takes over to open carry. I went with a lawyer on this and several other CCW folks. They agree with me. At the time of the meeting of the officer, when we're speaking, that's the time it starts. The status changed on the weapon. It is open carry. You don't have to notify.
Okay, well, I think the problem there, and again, this is something that would have to develop via case law, and in order for it to evolve, I think it would have to be a, quote, negative, unquote, encounter. And tell me this, was your encounter negative with the law enforcement officer?
Overall, I can tell the law enforcement officer didn't like the open carry, which you see a lot of in Ohio. You know, a lot of rights are being trampled by officers because they don't like this, and they threaten open carriers with, we can arrest you for aggravated menacing or disturbance of the peace. And I think this is totally outrageous.
Well, we both agree with you there.
They are becoming accustomed to it or not. You know, you do have your opinion on it, but that's fine. I just want to let you know, I like to see other people relate to this and see if they can give some good input.
I think it's a very good issue, Al, and I thank you for being candid with us. And again, I'm just going to tell you, locally in the greater Dayton area, I've not seen a whole lot of trampling on rights, and it is a process, a learning process that takes place. And when we come back after the break, we're going to continue on this topic. But it's something that it's a fine line, and we just want to continue down the right path.
Thanks very much for calling the show. We need to take a break at the bottom of the hour for news in the news center. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio WHIO.
I'm Daryl Bauer, WHIO Continuing News. If news breaks, we could break in any time. Now, here's more Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Thanks very much, Daryl. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. And if you'd like to be part of the show, please call the studio at 457-1290. 457-1290 is the number here. And we will get you up on the board and let you be part of the show as well. SimTrainer sponsors this show, and SimTrainer you can find a lot more information about by going to our website at sim-trainer.com. If you have been listening to the radio program, or maybe you're a brand new listener and would like to go back and hear some of the things that we've talked about in the past, you can find our radio page at sim-trainer.com/radio, and all the shows are archived there. We also have a link to our podcast, so if you are one of those who likes to download the show and listen to it later, I do my best to get those out there in time, and last week's not up yet. It's been a busy one. But we'll get those up probably by the end of the weekend. And you can also find our Facebook page, which is linked there, sim-trainer.com/radio has the links to all that information. Before the break, we were talking with Albert, and there's a couple of things that he said that I'd like to address. And one of those is the issue of open carry and people opposed to it. I know that there are some who haven't quite locked onto the fact that the right to keep and bear arms includes and bear, and carrying it openly is perfectly within Ohio law. It matches the state attorney Supreme Court made a decision that said if you're going to have restrictions on concealed carry, open carry must be legal, or the Ohio provision in Article 1, Section 4 would be violated. And so the right to carry openly has been protected and has been confirmed in case law. I don't have a problem with open carry from a legal perspective. Personally, the problem that I have with open carry is the risk that it puts the person at. Now, one of the big advantages that you have in a situation that requires self-defense is the element of surprise. As soon as you carry openly, you have forfeited that element of surprise. And I'm well aware of the argument that says, well, a bad guy is not going to do something dangerous when they know that there's someone there that can defend themselves, and they would know that because they can see the gun on the hip. Sometimes that may be true. In fact, we know of at least one situation that was documented where that was, in fact, the case. In a restaurant, a couple of guys were sitting there having a meal in a restaurant that they frequented. They were carrying openly. Somebody came in acting a little suspicious. They didn't notice him, but the waitress did. The guy left, and she had already called the police, recognizing that this guy was not acting normally and wasn't somebody that she knew. They came up and they found that, in fact, that was going to be a robbery, that they had many weapons in the vehicle that was parked around back of the restaurant. And the reason that they waited was specifically because they saw they could be at risk. One example. Let me provide another example. A person who owned a store got a license to carry a concealed handgun. He was in one of the areas where the news media decided it was their responsibility to publish lists of everybody that got a license. On his way to the store one day after that list was published, he was ambushed and shot from cover and killed on his way to his store because they knew he had a license to carry concealed. He wasn't even opening himself up by carrying openly, but the bad guys decided they were going to take him out before he had a chance to defend himself. There are both sides to that equation. If you carry openly and you deter something bad from happening, that's great. That's a good outcome. Nobody died. If you instead carry openly and it forces or inspires the criminal mind to take you out in advance, you're the one who pays the ultimate price.
You know, Mark, another issue I want to bring up is the concept of statutory authority for law enforcement to act versus case law and how that gives law enforcement officers guidelines or rules. The first thing is open carry, we've clearly established, has no statutory provision that addresses it. It is strictly a constitutional provision in the Ohio Constitution. And we have to rely on case law, which means something has to happen, unfortunately, before we get guidance from the courts to determine how we as law enforcement officers and you as citizens, you being the rest of the world, have to deal with circumstances as they evolve. And right now, open carry is in the early stages of its evolution from where people, you know, as recently as 10 years ago, gave virtually no consideration to it, to where now we have people like Al and others who, you know, they want that to be kind of a commonplace standard.
Well, to be clear, that is only recently that it was uncommon for open carry. You know, earlier in this country, open carry was the norm. That was very common. So we have migrated away from it, and now there is a turn that's well, you know, people are
relative
just moving
to
back.
Modern times.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's relatively new, and we went many years where we had the right, but we just never exercised it with the concept of you know, rural communities moving to urban settings that kind of contribute a lot of factors. But
right. The
other issue I want to mention, the whole idea of statutory law, law enforcement officers must follow the statutory provisions of law, and oftentimes those are pretty straightforward. And I will tell you the numerous examples of where statutory notations are noted in the concealed carry law relative to law enforcement officers were put there for a reason. And I, as a law enforcement officer, understand it, and I think citizens need to understand this. We as law enforcement officers have to have the authority to make sure we are safe in every encounter that we deal with citizens, whether it's a legitimate personal encounter of an open carry individual out on the street or a critical incident, active shooter situation in a location. The bottom line is, in both examples, law enforcement officers have the authority to take the firearm actually have the authority to take the firearm from the individual during the course of that transaction, just so if there's no violation of law or the individual is not otherwise prohibited from them, they must return it at the end of the encounter. There are statutory provisions, and again, I think it's very important for people to understand it. Under 2923.12 subsection G, it states that they must voluntarily surrender it pursuant to a law enforcement officer's request. And then what's really interesting, and I know some people probably don't realize this, but under 2923.163, the legislature specifically provided a protocol for law enforcement officers that they must follow in the return of the firearm. If they have doubts, then if the court later, subsequent court case, decides that the individual, the private citizen, was accurate, not only must the law enforcement officer return the firearm, but there's specific a wording in there that says that they have to award reasonable costs for both court costs and attorney fees to the person as the result of taking the firearm technically, unlawfully.
If there's a failure, especially if there's a failure to return it.
Right.
Immediately.
Yeah. And here's the thing.
That was put into place because there were some jurisdictions that were taking the firearm and flat refusing to return it ever.
Absolutely.
And so that's completely wrong.
None of us disagree with that. But I will tell you that I personally,
none of us in this room anyway.
I tell you, I personally and my brother and sister law enforcement officers, we will buck hard against any attempt to take our authority to do that in situations, because situations are rapidly evolving, highly stressful, ever-changing, and unpredictable. And as a result of that, we have to be able to be on top of things. And that's one way that I think the legislatures, I don't think they're going to yield on that. I know that there's people who are trying to pull things in the opposite direction. They don't want any limitations on the part of law enforcement. But I have to tell you, from a safety perspective, it has to be that way.
Well, even if they weren't codified in law specifically related to firearms or concealed carry or directly open carry, I think that some of those provisions would still apply in the general case because of things like the Terry stop and so forth. So it is certainly something that is worthy of discussion. And I think the more we can talk about it, the more we can understand both sides of that, the better it will be for both the law enforcement and for the concealed carry and open carry community. Let's move on, though. And let's go to talk to Bruce, who's calling and has a question about carrying a rifle. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. I got a question on carrying in the car.
Okay.
And how can I carry? I carry a revolver. How can I carry that? Can I lay that on the seat if there's nobody else in the car with me?
Yes.
And I carry an AR a lot of times. I move from farm to farm and carry it for groundhogs and stuff. Can I carry, is it considered with my CCW? Does that allow me to carry it loaded also?
Unfortunately, no. Your concealed handgun license specifically addresses handguns. So you can only, the only firearm that can be loaded would be a handgun. Now, you can have stripper clips loaded. And so if you're carrying an AR, I would recommend that you have the magazines unloaded. And when you need to load a magazine quickly, you can do that using stripper clips. So you can load that magazine in very short order, just a couple of seconds to load a magazine up, and then insert the magazine and do what you need to do. But as long as you're, if you're still on your property, I suspect that probably wouldn't be a problem. But if you're on the public roads, that's where it applies, and you can't have a loaded rifle or shotgun in the motor vehicle. As far as carrying your handgun, all the restrictions on how you must carry a handgun, as long as you have a concealed handgun license, there are no more restrictions. So although we recommend, and you are, the book recommends that you are to be safe, and just setting a revolver on the seat next to you, if you had to do a sudden stop and that gun slammed forward and fell off the seat, I'm not sure I would consider that to be safe. But if you wanted to mount a holster in the vehicle and have the handgun in the holster that's mounted to the vehicle as opposed to you, or if you wanted to have it in a glove box or in a console, or just even wedge between the seats, as long as you can do that safely, all of those things are legal.
Okay. Let's get really nitpicky then.
Okay.
Let's assume that I own both sides of the road and I'm driving across it. Do I still have to unload it while I'm driving on my property?
That's a great question. But if you're on the road, it's a public road and it's maintained by the government and it's maintained by the, you know, the city or the county, then yeah, that even crossing that road, technically that would, you know, are you going to be arrested over that little you know, 50 feet of asphalt going from one side to the other? Yeah, probably not. But if you're, you know, if you want to be picking nits, then from a very nitpicking legal perspective, during that crossing of the road, you are not in concert with the requirements for carrying an unloaded firearm in your motor vehicle.
Okay. Well, then technically, then it'd be legal to carry the AR. I got to carry some stripper. I got to carry my clip empty and. I could load it with stripper clips then.
Well, yeah. Your magazine has to be empty. Under current law, the magazine can't be loaded with the ammunition. Obviously, ammunition comes in stripper clips, in boxes, and in ammo cans, but the magazines can't. That's something that we've talked about on several shows, including last week, that there's current legislation that's going to try to clean that up because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for an individual going to the range, or you maybe going to your friend's farm down the road, that you can't go ahead and load up your mag so you can go down there and have an hour worth of shooting and waste that time loading it in the hot sun instead of in the confines of the air conditioning of your residence.
Well, that's not my consideration. My consideration is a lot of times when I pull in a driveway at a farm, I'll spot a groundhog up around a barn. And, you know, I want to step out and shoot fast.
Okay, I understand that. We need to take our last break for the hour. So we'll talk a little bit more when we come back. You can call us at 457-1290. We'll get you up on the board. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. We'd love to have you join us at 457-1290 if you'd like to be part of the show. And let's go right back out to the phones and talk to Vince, who's calling from Springfield. Vince, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good show. A lot of good information.
Thank you very much. How can we help you today?
Well, just an opinion or I guess, on the concealed carry with no training, or I just don't know if that's good or not. At least with the training, it's not extensive, but it does give you an overview of the laws, and you have some idea of what you can and can't do. And without it, I don't know.
What's your opinions on this? Okay. One of the things that I think is it been kind of a misconception about what the laws that are pending actually would do, there is no provision or there's no proposal that would say that you could carry concealed without training. That's simply not there. Although it was reported that way in the article that was published Sunday a couple of weeks ago, that's just inaccurate. I mean, it's not the case. The law that's pending right now is, let me get the number. I think it's it was the first one, one of the first ones.
House Bill 256.
Yeah, 256. And it's being called constitutional carry, but it really doesn't do quite that much. It does not eliminate the need for training. You still have to be qualified to get a license, even though you don't have to follow the application process and get the license. So you would have to have gone through a training that meets the requirement for the law, and you still have to be able to pass a background check. So the only thing that would change is whether or not you have a piece of plastic that has your picture on it that says we've approved and checked to see that yes, in fact, all those things are true. You still have to meet all those requirements. So does that change maybe your perspective on whether or not that bill might be useful?
It does, and makes me feel a lot better too. And then another question is, have they ever decided anything on requirements for second renewal?
As far as the what constitutes a requalification or a recertification of competence, no, there's nothing that identifies what that is. So whatever it was that your instructor did that said, yes, now you know you're competent, it must be an instructor that teaches a concealed carry class. So it can't but just be somebody who says, yeah, I think you're good enough. It has to be somebody who understands the requirements for the concealed carry class. And then they have to do essentially the same type of qualification. Now, what does range competence means? You know, that varies widely from you didn't shoot yourself when you loaded the gun and you were able to put a hole in the paper at 10 feet in 5 or 6 tries, to what we do, which is 80% on a range of distances, and you need to be able to do that competently to our standards. So right now there is no universal or objective standard for everybody to use, and we think that if that's going to stay in place, that it's something that ought to be done. In the meantime, well, we just have to, you know, kind of stand by and see if anything changes between now and when the first times will be back in April of next year. We're out of time. Thanks very much for being part of the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting From the Hip. Stay tuned after the news at the top of the hour for Bob and Gloria with There Is a Season on AM 1290 or 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.